Chapter 14. Akilla saw it all unfold. Just before they got there, he'd been shivering on the ridge, cradling his electro-maul in an armoured glove, and wanting very much to use it. He'd felt the wind prise at the collar of his armour, worming the cold deep against his leather-tough skin, and waited impatiently for the order to advance. The tanks were all thrumming with power, like iron beasts coiled for the leap forwards. Contingents of infantry stretched as far as he could see on either side of him, fully prepped for battle and palpably itching to charge down the slope. They could all see the city, tantalizingly close now, a heap of half-complete defences that looked ready to be washed away by the maelstrom. But they were held back. Their leashes were tugged tight, all for that lone, golden devil walking out without so much as an escort to meet the dying master of their piebald, haphazard army. Akilla found that contemptible. If he'd been in charge, he'd have already loosed the mortars, sent the tanks trundling down to the plain, and ordered the infantry squads to fall in behind them. There were no negotiations to be had here. Here, talk was, as it was everywhere else, a pointless distraction from the real business. The first sign of trouble had been his Oculus targeter twitching. Its range expander had been playing up ever since they had entered the heart of the storm, so he'd pulled it back from maximum power. That malfunction in itself had been odd. The device was meant to be immune from atmospheric contamination, but his mind had been fixated on the agreeable slaughter about to happen, and so he'd not paid much attention. Then it had started twitching madly. For a second, a ludicrous second, it looked as though there were a whole new storm of signals advancing out from the northern approaches to the gate, marching in serried formation under the lightning-sparked skirts of the Thunderheads. Then the reading was gone, replaced by a scream of static, and he could only see that irritating gaggle of thunder warriors standing out in the open like beggars haggling over scraps with the Emperor's golden ambassador. He shifted position, feeling his old limbs creak in the cold. Slack had his lance ready too, similarly burning to move.
"What are they waiting for?"
Akilla muttered. Slack stiffened.
"Damn,"
the big man said softly.
"What?" "Damn."
Akilla turned on him.
"What?"
Slack wasn't looking at him. Slack was peering out into the storm, his helm visor making a strange whirring sound. He must have had some kind of auger mechanism in there. He'd kept that quiet. Akilla turned back to the battlefield and tried to adjust his own augmetics. For a moment, all he saw was the snow gusting and the iron-dark terrain, all of it glowering under the relentless bludgeon of the wind. Then, in a sudden data blurt of clarity, he saw what Slack had just seen.
"Damn!"
he breathed. The battle signal finally flashed across his helm visor. The tank's engines gunned into life. The artillery opened up, and the infantry commanders roared out their orders to charge, and it felt like the entire ridge had suddenly dissolved into a sliding wave of movement and unfurled aggression that surged down the slope and out into the open. Akilla went with it, breaking into the run that he'd been waiting for all along. Slack and the others tumbled along the incline after him, tripping and slipping on the ice and scree. The wind screamed in their ears, and the hard boom of discharging weaponry split the skies. His heart thudded hard and fast, stirring his atrophied old body into uneasy action. He still didn't know exactly what he'd seen in that one sensor glimpse, only that it had changed everything. They'd been promised that the city would be undermanned and poorly defended, left to fend for itself by a military command hell-bent on conquest in the global west. They'd been told that the only fighting would be at the gate itself, after which they'd have free rein among the populace. There would be no plunder, they had been instructed, no atrocity, but no one had really believed that dreary talk. Once these things started, you could never really drag them back. But this was something else, something new, disciplined, numerous, moving down from the north under the cover of the breaking storm. Aquila had never seen anything like it. He didn't even have a name for it. He was heading into it all the same. The ground exploded around him, blasted apart by the furrowing drive of anti-infantry weapons. Tanks skidded on their tracks, hammered by an incoming wave of crackling energy beams. The slush boiled off, turning the frigid air into a steam hell through which lasfire pinged and skipped in eye-burning spikes. The night began to glow.
"Secure the gate!"
Aquila found himself shouting. Others were crying out the same thing, barked from 100 different vox emitters and helm grills. It was all too hurried, too disorganized. This was meant to have been a walkover. Slack caught up with him, lumbering through a hissing miasma of condensation. His thermal lance was firing bolt after bolt, all aimed ahead into the rolling steam clouds.
"What in hell?"
Slack was muttering, outraged.
"Thunder warriors? Where'd they find thunder warriors?"
That was the last thing he ever said. A single explosive round smacked out of the murk and thunked into his chest, blasting open as it impacted on the steel plate. Slack, who was a big man wearing heavy armor, was hurled from his feet and sent cartwheeling backwards, his airborne trail marked by flecks of cordite and thrown blood. Aquila fired blindly into the mists. The jag rifle in his left hand kicked with every loosed shell, while the maul in his right snarled with paralyzing electrical arcs.
"Come on, then!"
he roared, running hard along with the rest. A heavy tracked carrier bounced past on the left-hand side, its turret-mounted guns pumping wildly. He could hear the screams of soldiers being cut down, but couldn't tell where it was happening. He'd lost sight of both Ushatan and that golden devil, and now everything was an ear-ringing crash of full-throated battle, slammed up close in a pall of sensory overload. Then three of them emerged, 30 meters off, bursting out from the driving sleet, their armor slick from it, firing in studied bursts from guns that looked like heavy grenade launchers. They weren't hurrying, but striding with a terrifying collective certainty, laying down impossibly accurate fire in precise volleys. Their armor was all-encompassing, a tight-knit collection of thick plate, riveted and embossed, clearly purpose-built for the wearer and emblazoned with what looked like regimental icons. It was hard to make out just what those were in the gloom and muzzle flare, but Aquila thought he caught something like a winged blade etched on a dark grey ground. Aquila fired, dropping to one knee and emptying his rifle at the closest one. His hits shattered across the battle armour in a scatter of flying sparks, but did little damage. Two of the warriors advanced after other targets, but the third, the one Aquila had struck, swiveled round and came after him. For something so huge, it could move astonishingly fast, devouring the cratered terrain between the two of them in just a few loping strides. Aquila kept firing until the chamber clicked empty, hitting it with almost every shot, but barely slowing it. The armor looked impervious to harm, a segmented carapace like some huge insectoid, surmounted with a plumed helm and a snarl mask visage. The whole outfit growled, gouting smoke from an industrial shoulder-mounted power unit and crackling at the joints with released static electricity. Aquila threw his spent rifle to one side, thrust himself back to his feet, and swung his maul. The electrofeeder flared, surrounding the hammerhead with a corona of bright white energy. It was a good weapon, one that had crunched its way through dozens of enemies in its time, but it bounced off this creature's hide with a violence that nearly broke Aquila's wrist. The warrior smashed the hilt of his grenade launcher into Aquila's face, dropping him back to the slush. Aquila's head snapped away, wrenching his neck muscles, and he tasted blood across his teeth. Somehow, he was able to evade the next attack, a drop stamp from the warrior's studded boot, and thrust them all back up for a second attempt. He managed to drag it across some exposed cabling, causing the warrior to stumble, giving him a second's opportunity. Akilah swung hard, struggling up to his knees, going for the weakness. This time, though, the warrior was alert to the danger. The maul was caught in a dun-grey gauntlet and held tight, fizzing away like a sprite caught in a specimen jar. Akilah tried to yank it back, but lost his grip on the hilt. Weaponless now, he looked up at the monster above him. As Slack had noticed just before they'd got him, this thing looked so much like a thunder warrior. Pared down, maybe, less bulky, with the flamboyance of the old Cretaceous armor trimmed away and replaced by level-sunk rivets and hammered-down edges. It was grimmer, more functional, as if it had just rolled off the production line of some manufactorum somewhere. It didn't fight like a thunder warrior either, and there was something about its movements, hesitant, just a fraction erratic, that gave away its rawness. This thing was learning. This thing was learning how to kill.
"I taught you something at least,"
Akilah grinned, watching the warrior hoist his grenade launcher up hilt first. There wasn't much space for regret in his world. This was always how he'd planned to go out, after all.
"You'll watch your cabling next time."
Then the gun slammed down, smashing through what remained of his helm, silencing him for good. Simona sped up, racing through the narrow corridors amid a shifting twilight of fire and shadow. He felt his body being pushed for the first time in a mortal age, strained to its limits by the need for haste. He had outstripped even his brothers by then, propelled by urgent fear. Not fear for himself, of course, since ascending into his modified state, he was incapable of that. But there were other, more insidious kinds of anxiety, of failure, of falling short, of missing something or someone critical. This emotion was nothing so base as a desire to protect reputation or standing, but a locked-tight mania for the security of the Emperor and the Imperium, an obsession that never relaxed its grip on his soul. Every waking moment was punctuated by the semi-conscious tremors of imperfection and dissatisfaction, of not doing well enough, of needing to improve, of needing to ratchet up the levels of extremity just a little higher. In his more reflective moments, Simonas could appreciate the psychological role of this trait, implanted into him by careful hands during the excruciation of his second birth. He could understand that it drove all of his kind to excel in their narrow duties, to never rest, to punish themselves until the goal was accomplished. Everything about his essential makeup was orientated around this one quality. The irony of the custodians was that, though they surpassed every other warrior on Terror by margins so huge they were almost incalculable, they alone were incapable of drawing satisfaction from their superiority. There were no victories, only opportunities for further study. There were no conclusions, only avenues for more strenuous application. The Legio Custodes were swords that were forever honed, becoming sharper with every iteration until they aspired to cleave the very heavens themselves. And so Simonas feared nothing for himself, nor for the standing of his order, but only for the danger now exposed in the heart of the palace, the place he had been charged with keeping safe. He reached the heart of the dungeon and tore through it like wildfire, smashing aside every resistance mustered against him. The entire level was still teeming with exemplars, all of whom who had been put there to slow him, to frustrate him, to keep him from where he needed to be for just a few moments longer. None of them lasted more than seconds against his whirling sentinel blade, but even those momentary impediments added up. In the worst sections, where they had manned heavy barricades and donned infantry shields, it had taken whole frustrating minutes to clear them out. His armor was now covered in blood and crisscrossed with less burns. The deeper he went, the more scant the lumen cover became. In those gloomy reaches, his cloak in rags and his blade dripping with gore, He looked more like some revenant of a devil plane than an anointed son of unity. More explosions went off just as he reached the processor decks. Bodies were everywhere, their necks snapped and their workstations destroyed. Long ranks of examination tables had been set alight, and the overhead lifter claws ripped from their rails. The level of destruction was extreme and diligent. It had been done not just to hamper the work of the technicians, but to prevent it being resuscitated. The air shimmered with heat. Flames licked up from every shattered surface, exposing the facets of naked black rock. The copper tang of human blood was everywhere, spilled both from the bodies of the slain and the cracked culture vials. The chamber had been made hellish. That, again, was a word that had almost died, and yet here it was once more, sprouting into fresh and foul existence like a black-sapped weed. He knew where he would find her. Every blood-soaked corpse marked out the path she had taken, distributed at intervals like macabre waystones. He went down and down and down, past the points where not even senior technicians were granted regular access, to where the rock around him was hot to the touch, and where the chisel marks in the stone had, so they said, been carved by the hand of the Emperor himself. The air became thick, hard to draw in, sluggish as bile. A final door presented itself, lurching out of the gloom with its seals in place and its security bar lowered. Simona slashed once, twice with his blade, carving flickering lines of molten metal and exploding the power unit. He kicked, sending the heavy adamantium panel tumbling away, and was across the threshold and into a world of dark crimson ambience and the nerve-fraying hum of massive engines. The vault was gigantic, a long, high, narrow shaft in the world's crust that led onwards into occlusion. It was barely 10 meters wide, but extended ahead for many hundred, like the nave of some half-formed cathedral, buried under the mountain's roots and secure against any possible apocalypse on the surface. The floor was undressed rockcrete, antiseptically clean, but bare and unadorned. The roof was lost in shadow, far out of mortal eyesight. The walls on either side were glassy, shining like a field of stars amid a sullen red glow of bank lumens. Every square meter was marked by the same detail, row upon row of vials, all stacked with perfect precision and marked with identifier runes. At regular intervals, the colossal racks were scored with larger sigils engraved in gold. A raptor, a lightning strike, a drop of blood surmounted by stylized wings, a wolf's head. Simonas barely had time to take those in, though, for his quarry was sighted and ahead of him. Gangs of exemplars were finalizing their work, hauling crates on chain lifts, rigging cables, connecting power packs. Even as he sprinted towards them, Simonas was calculating the optimal path of slaughter. There were dozens present, some already firing at him, others busy with their work. He leapt, swinging his body around in a twist and hurling his blade's edge out wide. That stroke took out four in a single movement, lacerating through their armor without slowing. Then he was properly among them, in close, punching, kicking, thrusting, a tornado of movement. He jutted his gauntlet out, catching an exemplar in the chest and cracking him back against the vial racks, breaking his back. In the same moment, his blade punched through the stomach of another, lifting the victim from the ground, before a flick of a wrist sent the flailing corpse bouncing 3 meters down the floor. Then he saw her, Astarte, 20 meters further up along the shaft, perched high up on a rack-mounted access platform slung between the twin walls of glass. He whipped his sword up and loosed two shots from its hilt-mounted bolter, aimed perfectly, before leaping up to grasp a handhold on the near-side wall. Astarte made no attempt to evade the shells, and they exploded harmlessly across a glittering ovoid barrier. a personal void shield, something beyond price, something even the greatest of the Emperor's servants would have struggled to acquire easily.
"Your presence here is pointless, custodian," she called out wearily, activating the access platform's motors.
The flimsy structure began to shunt upwards, powered by an underslung battery of glowing suspensors.
"All is completed. All is done."
Simonas clambered after the rising platform, using the shelves as a ladder, noticing just how extensive the net of cabling around them both was, and how many heavy clusters of incendiaries had already been installed in position. It would take hours to untangle it all, and no doubt it had been rigged to blow if tampered with. Every movement he made, every grip on a metal shelf with his gauntlet, every kick with his boot, smashed more glass vials, sending cascades of twinkling shards falling to the floor below.
"Remain where you are,"
he warned, firing at the platform suspensors in a bid to bring it down, only for more close-range void shields to extinguish the shell's explosion.
"The Emperor's judgment is upon you."
Astarte laughed sourly, still gaining height. Simona saw that she was unarmed, save for something that looked like a remote detonator in one hand. He climbed faster.
"I really would not expect you to understand this," Astarte told him calmly. "Go carefully. You are trampling on your usurpers."
A shelf snapped, bent by his weight, and Simonas nearly lost his footing. He reached out with his one free hand for a moment, dangling precariously.
"Do not do this,"
he called out again, feeling more shelves creak under his weight.
"This is your work. This is your honored work."
Astarte's face, unhidden behind any helm or protection, twisted into a grimace.
"True work I believed in."
Her voice was racked with unfeigned pain.
"But it cannot be completed. It cannot be made perfect. We are making Thunder Warriors again. They will fail. There is sickness in their flesh, in all this flesh. They cannot but fail."
Simona started to climb again, going carefully, trying to ignore the way the shelves flexed and distorted under his bulk. More vials tumbled to the distant floor, smashing as they hit. Astarte was running out of room. Soon she would be as high as the platform would take her.
"That is not your decision to make," he warned, reaching a support pillar and seizing it. "Ah, it is so very much my decision to make," Astarte replied bitterly. "I created them. My knowledge is in them, mixed with all his chem strands and gene tangles. I worked so hard to cure them, but the originals are gone. Gone! You understand this? The whole project was them. We needed them. All we have left are the dregs, the byblows, to pull together and meld into something workable. It can't be done. You hear me, custodian? It can't be done."
Simonas felt another shelf crack and flung himself across a column gap towards a more stable section. The platform's ascent began to slow. They were both a long way up now. A fall would certainly kill her. It might even kill him.
"I care not," he called out. "This is the Emperor's domain. Unless he orders me otherwise, I will protect it."
"Ha!" Astarte snorted.
"You have no idea what he plans. He thinks he's running out of time. You know that? He's terrified of it, so he's reaching out for anything that will keep the Predator at bay for a little longer. He'll go to war with this poisoned army of flawed monsters because he never listens. Least of all to me."
The platform reached the upper levels and its brakes began to squeeze the rails. Simonas scanned it for weakness and saw a tiny potential gap where the runners met the chain links. The void coverage would gape just a little there, less than a centimetre, but only fully when the platform was stationary.
"Surrender yourself,"
he warned for a final time, gauging what would be needed. I will not permit harm to come to this place.
I cannot let them live,
Astarte said almost pleadingly, reaching for the detonator's controls. It looked as though there were tears running down her cheeks.
I know what they would do. They are my children, but I cannot let them live.
Stay your hand.
We were so close. Let that be history's verdict. We were so close.
The platform shuddered to a halt. Simonas flung his sword, blade over hilt, at the gap. The aim was flawless, and the tip sheared through the narrow cleft, jamming fast amid the chains and gears. The void shields blew, exploding in sequence along the platform's length. Astarte disappeared behind a static-laced inferno, screaming incoherently, but by then Simonas was already racing up the last of the vial shelves. He launched himself across the gap, his fingers clamping onto the reeling platform, his weight near wrenching it from its rail housings. He swung for a moment, suspended 50 meters up, before hauling himself onto the teetering surface. Astarte was on her knees. The detonator had been knocked from her grasp and was skittering across the tilted metal mesh floor. She scrambled after it. Simonas was faster. Compensating effortlessly for the tilting deck, he pounced, crushing the metal box in his gauntlet before swinging back to face Astarte. She was wounded. Lines of blood ran freely down her ravaged face, and she seemed unable to get to her feet. Her robes were ripped, revealing an emaciated body within, all ribs and bones and grey-stretched skin. She laughed grimly, struggling to get to her knees.
"Strike the warrior, fool!"
she spat, extending her left arm shakily.
"Never the weapon!"
Too late, Simona saw the circuitry embedded in her forearm, skeined amid the flesh in a coil of glinting metal. The useless detonator, now crushed into scrap, had been the oldest trick in the lexicon. He lunged at her, snapping his blade around to sever her arm at the elbow, but even Simonas of the Legio Custodes, fastest and best of warriors, could do nothing at that range. Just as his blade bit deep, he saw the sparks of power run down the conduits in her arm, turning Astarte's withered body into a channel of destruction. Down below, the receivers picked up the signal. Down below, the incendiaries kicked into life. Down below, booming like the tolling of great bells, the inferno was born, that would scour the chamber and all its contents from existence forever.